here's your host, Rick Hamada.
Thank you very much, Dick Wainwright. Aloha, kakahiaka, one and all. Welcome to this edition of Talk Story, heard on our network of stations all throughout the 50th state. The telephone number to call is 521-8383 here locally on Oahu. And for our good friends on the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. It's a delight to have Governor Linda Lingle with us in studio. Governor, it's always a pleasure. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick. Great to be here.
I'd like to welcome you back home. And again, we haven't had a chance to chat since the convention. Congratulate you on a stellar job, and we appreciate your wonderful representation of our state.
Well, thanks a lot, Rick. You know, whenever I'm away from home, whether I'm speaking politically or not, I want everybody at home to be proud. Even if they don't agree from a philosophical point of view, at least they feel I represent the state well. So I appreciate you saying that. It was a lot of fun, and to be able to introduce Sarah Palin to America was especially a great thing for me, because I was one of the few people who actually knew her at the time, and I wanted the people to know what a real quality person that she was, Rick. What you see is what she is, but there's more even than what you see, in that she's an extremely quick study. She's very down to earth. I can see why she has more than an 80% approval rating. And as you know, Rick, she took on the incumbent Republican governor in her own state and trounced him in the primary. And then she beat the two-term Democrat governor who had served Alaska in order to become the governor. And again, after nearly 2 years, she has more than an 80% approval rating, I think probably the highest of any governor in the nation. So it was an easy thing for me to do, to talk about her. I felt very comfortable doing that. And I expect between now and the election, I will be spending some time in the mainland speaking for her and for Senator McCain.
Very well done. It's a good segue into some of the travel that you'll be engaged in. Can you fill us in on some of those details?
Well, as you know, the tourism industry is having a very difficult time in Hawaii. There are some factors coming together, not of our own making, that are contributing to this. We have the subprime meltdown, which affected our main domestic market in California. We had the run-up in the price of oil, which affected the price of airline tickets everywhere in the world, and the general financial crisis and tightening of the credit markets, all occurring. Not of our making, but we just have to deal with it. And one way to do that is to get out a lot more, to talk about our state, to do it here in America and to do it in Asia. So I will be doing it while I'm in the mainland, talking about Hawaii and why it's such a great value right now for people's money. And then both Lieutenant Governor Iona and I will be in Asia in November in a variety of countries talking about tourism, because we need to focus on the short term, which would be more of our domestic markets, our proven markets in Japan. But we also need to be working for the long term interest, which means more of Korea because of the visa waiver coming up, and China because of the opening up of leisure travel. So we need to reach out like that. But also the HTA needs to be spending more money on marketing right now. We can't act as if everything is the same and the budget they adopted a year ago is still valid, because circumstances have changed. And just as a family or a radio station or a government needs to change when circumstances change, so does the HTA. So I've been encouraging them to move, and to move more quickly in the area of marketing. I've been working with industry leaders to make this point to HTA that you need to spend more on marketing now. Yes, we need to do the outreach. We need to do the public relations and get the free media by getting stories placed. But we also need to do the marketing.
Right. I need to ask you, of course, again about Rex Johnson. It appears in today's paper, the story that the Tourism Board is now receiving and being looked at askance for their handling of this scenario with Mr. Johnson. Fill us in once again. Remind us of your position on the leadership of HTA and why it's important to have faith and confidence in that leadership.
Well, I think it's clear that Rex Johnson is too damaged to lead this particular agency right now. This is the agency we put all of our confidence and our resources in to promote the number one industry of the state. And the person leading it needs to be the kind of person who reflects who we are as a people. And his activities regarding pornography, which happened a few weeks ago, and now this racist and sexist email that he's been sending around, it simply doesn't reflect the values of the people of Hawaii, and to allow him to continue is really endorsing what he was doing. And for him to say, I'm sorry, and Donna Kim to apologize, she didn't apologize, she's trying to explain away what he did, is just not genuine, Rick, because to say, I'm not really that way, I just forward this kind of email to people. Well, you and I don't forward that kind of email to people. If someone sent that to us, I mean, I'd write back and say, this is disgusting, don't send me this anymore. But to continue to forward it on over a long period of time, and then to say, but it doesn't really reflect who I am, well, then why were you sending it? What was the point of sending it if it doesn't reflect who you are? And I've seen many of the emails, Rick, and an average person in Hawaii would be disgusted. So to allow him now to be over in Japan promoting tourism, I said, what if he was sending anti-Japanese email? Would we allow him to go and to promote Hawaii in Japan? Of course not. So why is it the fact that he attacked African-Americans, people of Hispanic background, people of Arab background, women? You know, he just ran the gamut. To allow him to continue to represent a state that holds ourselves out, and I believe we are, a place of not just tolerating differences, but celebrating differences, I think is damaging to the agency, obviously, but it's damaging to the state, to our long-term reputation. And what you haven't read in the paper and what is starting to come in is these mainland wholesalers telling the HTA, you need to get rid of this guy. This is bad for business, because they deal with a wide spectrum of people. So once your wholesalers are saying that, Rick, it's people from the mainland who are objective. They're not involved here locally other than saying this is going to hurt bookings into the state. I think when you reach that point, it's never a fun thing to fire someone. It's the toughest thing I have to do as a leader, but there are times you have to do it.
Is this final question on this? With the board itself, do they have the absolute authority on the determination of hiring and firing, or does your office have the ability to terminate Mr. Johnson's employment?
The HTA has that sole authority, Rick, but I decided to come out in a public fashion to state the opinion of my administration, what we think about this, what we think needs to be done. And sometimes when you're dealing with a part-time board who meets once a month and maybe has a couple of committee meetings a month, you know, it's a tough thing to do publicly, to remove someone, especially if you're friends with that person, you know that person, you've worked together. It's a very difficult thing to do, but their responsibility is not to be comfortable. Their responsibility is to do what's right for our state over the long term. And the right thing to me seems very obvious at this point.
We'll continue our conversation. Thank you for being with us. We're at 20 past the hour, and we're talking, of course, with Governor Linda Lingle this morning. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. One of the headlines that has captured our attention, Governor, of course, has to do with financial matters. Can you fill us in the very latest, the condition of our economic status, and especially in regard to our budget? Where are we today?
Well, the revenues of the state, Rick, have moderated substantially, so that this year they're projecting, you know, maybe a 1% increase in revenues. And what that means is, because expenses go up and wages and electricity go up, the Council on Revenues, based on their most recent projection, says that if nothing was done, then when we get to the end of fiscal year 2011, that there would be a $900 million deficit. Again, that includes this year plus the next 2 years. And so what that means is we need to make adjustments between now and then, and we're doing it every day, so that that $903 million is not something that will occur. In fact, it will not occur. It can't occur by law, because we have to have a balanced budget. So it means between now and then, working in a very creative and aggressive and effective way to continue to provide the most critical services, creating new partnerships, encouraging new investment into the state, while cutting out unnecessary expenses. So the steps we've taken thus far include the original 4% restriction that I announced in June of this year, because seeing this was coming and wanting to get prepared for it. We've also restricted spending on new programs, including legislative acts that occurred outside the budget. So in other words, the legislature will pass a law outside of the budget that says we want to create a long-term care task force, and we want to give them $100,000 to operate their task force. I won't release money like that, for instance. It's something new. It's not an ongoing program. It's not a direct service. And it was outside of the budget in any case. I've also required that any travel outside of the state, whether paid with federal, general, or special funds, come to me personally for approval. Any contract over $10,000, we have a hiring freeze, except for positions in the state hospitals, in our Department of Public Safety, anything with Felix consent decree issues, classroom teaching positions are exempted. So there are exemptions to that. But generally, a freeze on positions with a requirement for an individual justification if we're adding any individual position. I've also begun meetings with the labor unions that I deal with, and there are four, UPW, HGEA, HSTA, and UPA, which represents the university professors, to talk with them about delaying any discussions of salary increases for a year. Let's get things turned around before we talk about any kind of increases. And I've started those meetings just to lay out for them what the financial picture is, why I think it's a waste of time to have these discussions when we don't have the money to offer, and to ask them to recognize that when we did have increasing revenues, we shared those revenues, we were fair to the employees of the government, but now is a time for all of us to pull together, and all of us means not just the governor sitting down and slashing the budget, but working with the unions, working with legislators, calling in the private sector, so the social service agencies, for instance, the major funders of social services, as well as providers, and talk through how we're going to get through this period of time. Again, encouraging outside investment, both from the federal government through the energy grants we've been getting, through the money Lillian Kohler gets from Human Services, as well as the Disney project, so private funding. Disney is going to break ground in November for their project out at Ko'olina. Hawaiian Homes has the big DeBartolo Shopping Center project out in Kapolei. We've got a very large project in North Kona that's been awarded to Forest Cities, new housing development there. So it's this combination of actions, creativity, and recognition that there are going to be some cuts, and as soon as we start it, people are, of course, if it's their program or their project, they're going to not be happy about it. But I've told my cabinet, this is the time for leadership, and you just have to tough out these times, recognize that, and there'll be some politicians, Rick, who simply are so partisan that they can't recognize that at a time like this, the one thing that will get us through is to pull together. There's always time for partisanship later on when we get through these tough times. And I equate this time to this, financially, I equate it to the time after 9/11, when it was just important to pull together as a state. This combination of rising energy prices, of meltdown in the subprime, the tightening credit markets, the financial situation on Wall Street, this really screams at us to get together in our actions now. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that happens. I've also been reconstituting and talking with our Economic Momentum Commission leadership team that helped us out a couple of years ago that came up with some really great ideas. We're talking with them again. And then finally, Rick, we're moving very aggressively on our capital improvement projects. These are our major construction projects that help us to keep the economy activated. And we have some major plans, as you know, an airport modernization plan, harbors, highways. There are school projects, university projects, and our budget director, Georgina Kawamura, is in New York right now. We have a bond issue going out on the 22nd, 23rd time period next week. Later this week, we have our airport bond rating sessions that are going to go on. So with this meltdown in the financial markets, it may turn out, and I believe it will turn out to be a great time to be in the bond market when you're selling such good bonds as State of Hawaii bonds, because people are looking for a safe place right now to put their money with a guaranteed rate of return. And our bonds have just been re-rated by all three agencies, Rick, and we maintained our very high AA rating with a stable outlook. And that is a testament to everyone pulling together. And it's a testament to the presentation that our team makes to these bond rating agencies, making the case that, yes, tourism may be affected in the short term, but here's how we're overcoming it. Laying out the numbers, these people really deal in hard facts. as well as their confidence level in the fiscal management of the state. So during such turbulent times, to maintain your high ratings plus get a stable outlook, you know, they can put you on a watch, they can put a negative outlook, but they didn't. They said stable outlook for State of Hawaii bonds. So I'm hoping the interest rate we pay will be low, which means we borrow those monies at low interest rate, which means we save taxpayer dollars in that way. So that keeping that capital improvement project money flowing is an important part of our strategy as well to keep people employed.
Just very quickly, Secretary Paulson earlier today reiterated that the fundamentals of our American economy, the economy of our nation, is strong, is sound. Can you comment on the fundamentals of our local economy?
Well, I would agree with Secretary Paulson at the national level, and it's certainly true here in Hawaii. And the fundamentals would be, again, a strong fiscal management, a great business community, continuing to find ways to reduce the cost of doing business, as we did recently with the unemployment insurance taxes going down $50 million a year for the next 3 years. Workers' comp costs going down again. We just had a release from our insurance commissioner. This is the fourth year in a row those costs are coming down. Forbes magazine moved us up 10 spots in the best place to do business in America. The Milken Institute for Science and Technology has moved us up the same, I think, about 10 slots. And also, while we were doing that, Rick, we were one of only 12 states in America last year to have a reduction in the rate of poverty. So I think our fundamentals are quite strong. We can always do better. We always want to do better. But people should, I think, have confidence in the fundamentals. Again, these issues that are occurring are outside of our state. They're not of our making. We have to deal with them. But our fundamentals are strong.
We'll continue with Governor Linda Lingle, your telephone calls and more right after our bottom of the hour break. Delighted that you've chosen us as your station this morning. And our edition of Talk Story will continue in just a bit. 36 past the hour. Let's jump in with our friends who have been waiting patiently online. Governor Linda Lingle in studio with us. 521-8383. 1-888-565-8383 for our good friends on the neighbor islands. George is dialed in.
Hello.
Hawaii Kai here on Oahu. George, thanks for your call and patience. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Rick. Good morning, Madam Governor.
Hi, George.
Madam Governor, I think your timing is impeccable. Now that the commercial and private sector is kind of fading away, you're doing infrastructure and you're building out things like Kualo Basin. You've got some good people. This Anthony Ching and Richard Quitten, very, very good people. So I think you're on the right track. Your timing is terrific. But I think that you need to grow the top line, Governor. And that is, I think that there are taxes that are owed to the people of the state that are not being collected. And there's enough out there that's worthy of being looked into. Well, now, we've tried talking to the LG. We've tried talking to the Director of Taxation. They know that there's taxes out there to be collected, but they're just timid. They're very, very timid. And I just don't see that as being an option at this point. If you're going to be cutting goods and services, not goods, but if you're going to be cutting services to the poorest of the poor, we've got to make sure that you're collecting all of the taxes owed first.
George, thank you for the call.
This is a great point, George, and I can promise you our tax director is not timid.
Far from it.
but he does have a basic philosophy, which we came in with in my administration, and that's fairness in the tax system. And that means two things. It means making sure that everyone pays their fair share, because if not, then the rest of us are paying more than we should. And secondly, is treating all taxpayers in a similar situation exactly the same. So it doesn't matter who you are, how long you've lived in Hawaii, whether the tax director knows you or doesn't know you, you're treated fairly under the law. So fairness has been really the underpinning of our entire tax philosophy. But George is correct, Rick, that there are people who are not paying their fair share, and they fall into a number of categories. And our tax office is very, I think, reasonably aggressive in making sure that everyone pays their fair share, again, because it's just fair to everyone. And let me give you an example of the kinds of things that have gone on. The tax department has implemented a much more sophisticated computer system through the years that now match up excise tax and income taxes. So you can make certain if someone is paying on one side and not on the other side. It also, we now have interlinks with the federal government. So that's a new capability we haven't had previously. And the company that did the computer system does them all over the country, and they're actually paid a percentage of what we collect. We wouldn't have collected it otherwise because we wouldn't have known that it was owed. Also, the tax department takes on individual projects. They call them projects. So, for instance, out-of-state contractors would be a project. So we look at whether or not that company is paying the 4% in this state, whether they're paying their unemployment insurance taxes and so on. They did a project for local realtors, if you remember, about the 4%. And, in fact, some people were actually... One person recently prosecuted and convicted over this who was not paying the proper amount of taxes. So, again, I think we're reasonably aggressive without, you know, hounding citizens. We also at times, Rick, do enter into settlement agreements. If it's over a certain amount, it has to come to me. And that's usually if a person has tried, they've gotten contracted a disease through no fault of their own, they had a business. They started to fall behind in paying their employee taxes or something like that, we will enter into settlements with people because, again, we're trying to be fair and treat people in a fair and in a consistent manner across the board. But George raises a critically important point. You have to collect the revenues that are owed to you, especially during times like this, but at all times. It's a fair thing to do, and I want him to know we are definitely not timid in this area.
George, thank you so very much for your question and also statements. We appreciate it greatly.
Rick, it does it does raise one related issue, and that's the tax credits.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be an issue in the upcoming legislative session. We're going to be making some recommendations regarding the technology and the research credits, and there's going to be an outcry from certain industry groups and people on the other side who have benefited greatly from the tax credits. And we're going to have to talk through what is the value of those credits to us. And we're going to be showing legislators how the amount of those tax credits have grown into the hundreds of millions of dollars a year now that we're losing, and I put losing in quotation marks, we're losing because we're granting these credits. People will argue, well, you're gaining because you're creating new jobs in the technology sector. And I believe both of those things are true. We feel we need to rebalance that. We don't think we can give the kind of generous credits that had been given because we simply can't afford it right now. So you will see some proposals this session and some good information coming out about what these credits are costing us, what we're receiving because we're granting these credits, and whether or not we can continue with the level of credits we have now.
Has there been an analysis up until this point to determine, to use the phrase ROI, a return on investment, has there been a determination of what that number might be?
The work has started on that, okay. Rick, and there's a final report due to the legislators at the end of this year. So that will be the basis for our discussion going forward.
All righty. We're going to continue our conversation with Edwin, who is in Mililani today. Edwin, thank you for your call. You're talking with Governor Linda Lingle. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. This is Edmund, and thanks, Rick, and you do a great job, and so does the governor. Love you.
Hi, Edmund. Thanks.
I got a couple of topics I'd like to brush up on, and I'll hang up after I make my input here. The first one is state facilities. You know, I believe millions and millions of dollars are being wasted because we have to refurbish or rebuild because the buildings aren't being maintained properly, and I don't think DAGs can do a proper job. And I would like to see your take on possibly bringing in private enterprise to do maintenance of the facilities so that they are upkept properly and save taxpayers, the cost of rebuilding and refurbishing. And that's the first point. And the second point is, have you endorsed anyone for mayor? And would you consider endorsing Panos? And I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Edmund.
Thanks, Edmund. I'm not endorsing anyone in the mayor's race. As you know, it's a nonpartisan race. If we had a bona fide Republican candidate to I thought was someone with a good program, I likely would endorse them, but I am not endorsing anyone in that race. I will tell you, Edmund, I like the fact that there are three candidates in the race. I think competition is good, and I think people have a very wide choice. And the bottom line, I would say, is whoever you're for in that race or any other race, please go out and vote on Saturday. If you haven't already done it, this Saturday is the primary election. It's an important election, as is every election, and it really underscores our responsibilities as a citizen. This is a right we have, and I think a responsibility as well in a democracy. I think your point, Edmund, about the maintenance is a good one. Whether the maintenance is done by government employees or it's done by private enterprise, when you don't maintain facilities, they do tend to fall in disrepair and cost you more in the long run. The challenge has always been in government that people like to open new buildings, but they don't like to fund the maintenance at the level that you need in order to maintain these buildings. We've had in the judiciary, which comes to mind quickly, we've had huge new courthouses and judicial buildings built. We have one on Kauai, the Big Island about to open. We have Kapolei being built. Every time you do this, you add buildings, you really need to increase the maintenance budget substantially, and yet they rarely are. We also have more schools. We have more university buildings that we've added. And again, the amount of maintenance is not usually put in that you need. So I think Edmund's making a fair point here, Rick. And again, under the current law, our ability to hire privately has been diminished substantially by changes in the law. I like to have a more open system where we could, if we feel it's appropriate, contract out those kind of services. But right now, we're fairly limited in that way.
Thank you so much for the call, Edmund. We appreciate it very much. More of your calls coming straight ahead. Our final segment with Governor Linda Lingle for this edition of Talk Story will continue. 51 past the hour, and thank you so much for being with us on this edition of Talk Story featuring Governor Linda Lingle. Delighted the governor is with us in studio. And there's an event that's coming up here on Oahu that really deserves a great deal of attention. And Governor, can you fill us in on the Women's Conference? It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful event.
Rick, it has become so exciting. We're in our fifth year. This is the International Women's Leadership Conference. It's Wednesday, September 24th. It's an all-day event at the Sheraton Waikiki Hotel. And I can tell you there are only a few seats remaining. We're over 900 people right now.
Wow.
So every year it's grown, really grown larger and larger. Registration deadline is Sunday, September 21st, and you can go on our government website, hawaii.gov, and you'll see it immediately. We have speakers from eight different countries and some fascinating women. And by the way, Rick, because I get asked this question, men are not only allowed to attend, they're invited to attend.
Encouraged.
It's a fun day, and we do have some men who come every year and bring people from their company or their organization with them. So you can buy it as an individual person, or your company can sponsor a table and you can come. We have the first female and the first Filipino-American executive chef of the White House coming.
Wonderful.
And we did have a special deal where if you signed up early, and I think that's all over now, but you get to go to a breakfast with the executive chef from the White House. So that should be very nice. We also have Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of State, via video, going to address the members, the attendees. We also have the first female police chief in the nation's capital, Chief Kathy Lanier, coming from Washington, D.C., and a whole host of others. Among the most inspirational, I expect, Rick, will be a woman. She's from Sudan originally. She's now working in Boston at a major firm as a paralegal. She was one of the children who had to walk out of the Sudan in order to survive the genocide that took place there. And every year, we seem to have a speaker like this who has survived horrible physical challenges, and I expect she will be very inspirational. Mm-hmm. If you haven't come before, it really is a unique and special event, a great day of inspiration and of sharing with other women here in the state. And for those of you who keep coming back, I think we must be doing something right, Rick, because really our returning people are very, very large, and they look forward to this event.
Fantastic. What's the date again? And if people are interested, how can they make their reservation?
It's Wednesday, September 24th at the Sheraton Waikiki International Women's Leadership Conference. And you can register online until Sunday, the 21st, at hawaii.gov, and you'll see the Women's Conference come up.
We'll continue our conversation with folks online. Let's head on over to the Big Island, Hilo side. Bill is with us today. Bill, thank you for your call, and welcome, Bill. You're on with Governor Linda Lingle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question as it relates to the rail. Assuming that it passes, the cost has been put out at $900 million, and apparently there's some question as to whether there's going to be additional funding from the federal government for this. And and everything. Assuming that it passes, and assuming the cost is at $900 million, are the people of Oahu going to be the only ones who are responsible for this, or is it going to fall to the people of the rest of the state?
May I interject for just a moment? And, Bill, thank you for the question. The cost estimated as of right now is $3.7 billion. However, estimates at full build-out are approximately $6 billion. So, Bill, thank you for the question, but that's more of the financial picture.
Well, thanks, Bill. It's a good and a fair question. Under the current law, only residents of Oahu will be paying to fund the rail system. That's the current situation. But as you know, and anyone who's been around any length of time knows that if projects get into trouble, things can change. But as of now, in order to have any kind of change and make Neighbor Islanders pay for this rail system, the state legislature would have to pass a new law. And I think that would be very, very difficult for them to do at this time. Also, the amount of funding coming from the federal government is not what it was anticipated to be, just because you've seen the news recently about the Federal Highway Fund being lower. They had an emergency infusion of $8 billion from the general fund of the government into the highway fund. And that's because when people drive less, they pay less in taxes, mm-hmm. and so there's less money going into that fund. So the more successful we are at getting people to conserve and to drive less, and we get hybrid vehicles, and people don't need as much gas, they don't pay as much in taxes, and therefore you don't have as much money in those funds. So I think there are still many, many questions up in the air, Rick, about this project and about all highway or transit projects.
Bill, thank you very much for the entree. We appreciate it. With time remaining, we go to Rob, who is on cell phone for Governor Linda Lingle. Rob, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Governor, and good night for Rick.
Good morning.
Hi, Rob.
A question concerning state vehicles. I was at a big box, local big box the other day, and a state vehicle, DNLR vehicle, big truck, teen cab, pulled up and noticed a person get out, and then four little kids, car seats in there, and I assume a woman, and they all get out of that vehicle and walk into the store. My question is there anyone that has authority to use that as a personal vehicle? And if they don't, then how do we report those kind of things?
Thank you very much, Rob.
Well, Rob, the quickest way to report something like that is to get the license number of the vehicle, and all of the state vehicles will have license plates on them. And if you can get that and report it to us, that would be a big help with any of the details. I think, Rick, perhaps Russ Saito, who heads up the DAG's office, our Department of Accounting and General Services, would be the best person to come on, even on the phone, and review with you what are the state policies, because there are very clear and strict policies about the use of vehicles for personal use. And my recollection, and I hate to even get started because I think Russ would be a better person to discuss it, but my recollection is that if you were on the way, for instance, to school, and you're on your way to work, you're allowed to drop your children off, but you're not allowed to use vehicles for personal mm-hmm. shopping errands and so on, unless if you're on a 24-hour-a-day emergency standby, for instance, as some of our enforcement people might be, then there might be a different standard applied. But I think it's a good question, something the citizens should know. Get Russ on to tell you what the policy is. But in the meantime, if you feel one of our vehicles is not being used appropriately, please get the license number and the details and give a call.
Well, Governor, it's been a great hour. Went by way too quickly.
Thanks, Rick. Good to be back.
And we look forward to the next time.
Thank you. Aloha.
Governor Linda Lingle with us for this edition of Talk Story. We thank her very much. Thank you for all of your calls. And we'll get together next week at this time on this station. In the meantime, mahalos and aloha.